Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Details at putnam.com. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
2 years of campaigning, $2 billion overall in political spending, and the whole thing comes down to this. Now what? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build stronger customer relationships through email marketing. ConstantContact.com. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation, online at kauffman.org.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. Today is the 5th of November, Wednesday. Great to have you with us on a day when the financial crisis yields, if only briefly, to politics. After that two-year campaign, the people have finally spoken. Estimates are the turnout yesterday was the highest it's been in 45 years, as voters put the economy squarely at the top of their list of worries. Here's what some of those voters had to say about what they're looking for out of the next 4 years.
My name is Barb McCarthy, and I live downtown Madison. My hopes for our economic future are that the government will take as much responsibility in handling the finances of this country as we all have to take individually.
My name is Kathleen Schlegel, and I live in Chicago, Illinois. I fear that the next president will try to appeal to everybody instead of giving us the hard news and reality that we need.
My name is Ken Anthony, and I live right here in Albuquerque. I think the economy is totally whacked out right now. You know, you got middle-class people that's losing their homes, losing their cars.
Carice Law, I live in Graham, North Carolina. I just hope that he knows what to do to help us bring the economy back up.
Funny she should mention that, because that's what a lot of people have been wondering. Now that Obama's finally gotten the job, what's he going to do with it? How's he going to handle the economy, deal with the housing mess, just fix things? Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale is on the line to help answer those questions and some others, too. Hiya, John.
Hello, Kai.
So let's see. The president-elect inherits a $700 billion bailout package already underway. I imagine, though, he's going to want to do some of his own things here.
He will, although at the beginning, I'm not sure we can expect that. He's shown that he's kind of cautious when it comes to an economy that, after all, is suffering from its own volatility right now. But he's been more critical of predatory lenders and greedy Wall Street hedge fund managers. So when it comes to reforming the financial system, he's clearly going to be more inclined toward tougher regulations, maybe more disclosure, more oversight.
What about the guy who's going to run this thing for him, the new Treasury Secretary? Who's on the short list?
Well, there are three names. Lawrence Summers, he's already done the job for President Clinton. Paul Volcker, who was appointed Federal Reserve Chairman by President Carter and earned a lot of kudos for taming inflation. And Timothy Geithner, he's the only real newcomer on the list. But at the New York Fed, he's been very actively involved in the bailout and the rescue of banks and insurance companies. So all of these are old hands, and they're more proof that Obama is not planning any new direction for the bailout. We also got more proof of that today when the president-elect's office announced a transition team that's full of insiders, many former Clinton administration people. It shows that despite all this talk about change, putting a government together leans toward experience and continuity, especially in times like these.
What about the housing industry, John, and something for mortgage holders and homeowners?
He campaigned for a 90-day moratorium on foreclosures that are imposed on homeowners who are acting in good faith. He favors allowing bankruptcy judges to adjust mortgage interest rates for homebuyers who are in bankruptcy. And on the broader issue of fixing the mortgage mess, he would privatize the semi-government entities, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
John, what about a second stimulus package? What's the latest on that?
Yeah, absolutely. The president-elect is a strong supporter of spending on infrastructure and new energy programs. This is going to be an early test of how the first-term senator works with Congress, because they're going to call the shots here. The question is whether Democrats will want to do something quickly and get something that President Bush is willing to sign, or should they wait until next year and pass a stimulus bill when the Democrats have more power to shape it in Congress and a new president more willing to sign what they come up with.
Marketplace's John Dimsdale on the line from Washington. Thank you, John.
You're welcome, Kai.
About that stimulus package, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi said today it's her first priority. And as John told us, Obama's already on board with the idea that some kind of package is needed. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer explains it'll probably be structured to fit right in with the president-elect's philosophy.
Obama wants to create a new infrastructure bank to finance projects. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says any stimulus package would include infrastructure spending. Pete Ruane is president of the American Road and Transportation Builders Association.
Over 3,000 projects are ready to go to market. They could let the contracts immediately.
Those projects range from resurfacing roads to bridge repair. But can patching potholes put us on the road to recovery? David Ressler says no. He's chief economist of Nomura Securities. He says the big projects with the most jobs take too long to have an immediate impact. Think of the last time you remodeled your kitchen. Ressler just redid his.
It took 6 months of planning to do that. That's a kitchen in a single-family house. It's not a bridge to anywhere that public works projects might be.
Obama also wants to spend $150 billion on clean energy, creating 5 million new jobs. But economist Robertson Williams of the Tax Policy Center says we don't have time to train people for those jobs.
If the people losing their jobs today are the folks in the financial markets who've been doing all the credit default swaps, it's unlikely they have the capability of designing solar panels or other energy-saving devices.
Obama also backs tax credits for companies creating new jobs. But Williams says that's not enough. What Obama really needs to do, he says, is ease the credit crunch and housing crisis. Then the economy could create jobs all by itself. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
I think Barack Obama's honeymoon with the economy lasted all of about 8 hours from the time the election was called last night until the latest dose of bad news arrived this morning. And then the markets opened, and it only got worse from there. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. So the elections are officially over. Even the shouting from last night has died down, which means, really, that things are just getting started. We've got a pair of commentaries today on the Obama transition. First, Robert Reich.
Obama's stunning victory, combined with larger Democratic majorities in both houses of Congress and the deepening economic crisis, should provide him a strong mandate for change. America and the world have signaled they're ready for it. But as we roll up our shirt sleeves, it's important to be aware of the challenges ahead. First is the ever more powerful army of Washington lobbyists. Pharmaceutical companies, insurers, and giant hospital chains will seek to control any health care initiative. Producers of coal, ethanol, and nuclear power will try to dominate the energy and environmental agenda. Military contractors will want to maintain defense spending. And Wall Street will want even more control over its massive bailout. Then there's the ballooning budget deficit brought on by slower growth and the Wall Street bailout. As a result, fiscal conservatives, including a newly enlarged group of Blue Dog Democrats, will be reluctant to support any new spending. And don't forget all the business groups, Republicans, libertarians, talk radio hosts, and Yale television personalities who will fulminate over anything resembling a tax hike on the rich or big corporations. Obama's agenda can survive all this, but only if he continues to mobilize and energize the public behind it. That means creating a new politics, utilizing his vast campaign network of volunteers, grassroots activists, and internet participants, and turning it into a movement to take back our democracy from the lobbyists, naysayers, pork peddlers, and muddied interests that normally run things in Washington. In other words, the real contest is just beginning. Can Obama succeed? As we heard last night, yes, we can.
Voters answered Barack Obama's call for change last night. Fixing the economy is obviously change number one. He doesn't actually get the job until January, though. We don't know yet how closely he's going to work with the Bush administration. But commentator David Frum says this is no time to play politics.
The story goes that somebody once asked Ronald Reagan how an actor could be president. Reagan supposedly answered, "I don't know how anybody could be president if they had not been an actor." Successful politicians tend to be theatrical. But in turbulent economic times, this political instinct can be dangerous to everyone else's financial well-being. An ominous precedent was set by another great dramatizing president, Franklin Roosevelt. FDR was elected in November 1932, but not inaugurated until March 1933 under the rules of the day. And for 5 months, some of the most desperate months in American financial history, Roosevelt absolutely refused to cooperate in any way with the outgoing Hoover administration, refused even to offer any hint or clue as to the economic measures he would favor once in office. Roosevelt had many motives. In part, he wanted to avoid political contamination by the toxic outgoing president. But many suspected that Roosevelt understood that the worse things were on the day before he took office, the better he would look on his first day in. Deliberately or not, Roosevelt maximized political and economic uncertainty for almost half a year, at unknowable cost to the American people, but to his own ultimate political benefit. Might such a temptation be repeated? There are signs that the worst of the Wall Street financial crisis lies behind us. Credit conditions are apparently thawing. Huge liquidity has been injected into markets, and stock indexes seem to have stabilized. A recession has begun, but its severity remains uncertain. From the point of view of the new president, this bottoming out is premature. He needs the recovery to begin in January, and will benefit if it can be made to look that way. That would be understandable politics. It could be very dangerous economics.
That was David Frum. He's a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. We also heard from Robert Reich today. He's a professor of public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Send us your thoughts through our website, Works Best. It's marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact. Well, so much for a post-election bounce. Wall Street gave back all of yesterday's gains today and then some. We'll do the numbers in just a bit, but the sneak preview goes a little something like this. The Dow gave up 200 points just in the last hour of trading today. To figure out whether it's the coming change in administrations or something more tangible that's got traders uneasy, we've called Bernie McSherry. He's a floor trader with Catone & Company in New York. Mr. McSherry, good to have you with us.
Thanks. Good to be here.
When you got to work this morning, were you expecting a day like this?
I was expecting a bit of a decline, but I thought the volume would be heavier. I thought we'd have a little more activity, but I've been surprised before, so why not today?
What else would surprise you? What's left out there that could surprise you?
Well, I think we're really focusing on just how bad this recession is going to be. You know, we heard a lot of talk about a Great Depression a few weeks ago, a meltdown of the financial system, and it's still unclear just how severely that may have crimped consumer spending and business spending.
What's the sense on the floor about the Obama administration itself?
Well, people are concerned. You know, everything that's unknown is always a concern for traders. They're hopeful that that President-elect Obama announces his Treasury Department appointments quickly and perhaps can reassure folks that he's got a good team in place.
What if you guys don't like the team he picks, though?
Well, you know, if you look at the folks he surrounded himself with, Paul Volcker and Warren Buffett and Larry Summers, they're pretty good, pretty smart guys, and I think people will be pleased with them.
Do you think there will be an urge to reach out more to Wall Street from an Obama administration?
Well, let's hope so. I mean, in this last crisis, we were pleased that that Hank Paulson was involved. You know, he certainly understands this market as well as anyone, and perhaps a few of the earlier picks for Treasury Secretaries were not as well-versed in some of the intricacies of the market. So I'd like to see somebody selected who knows Wall Street.
Granted, a president's power and authority over the markets is limited at best. Is there something that could happen that he might do that would really disappoint Wall Street?
Well, you know, Wall Street's always concerned about taxes, and I haven't heard anything coming out that indicates he's going to be particularly radical in that direction. I think modest tax increases and modest increases in the capital gains tax will probably be well-received, and I don't anticipate any real problems going forward.
What's your sense of the little bounce that the markets have had the past couple of weeks, and it being a question of fundamentals, things actually getting better, or anticipation that the election's finally going to be over and we can move on?
Yeah, I think, well, part of it was the anticipation that the election would resolve at least some of the uncertainty in the marketplace. And I think the rest of the rally was really a response to the fact that, you know, we've been pricing in a failure of the system, a meltdown of the entire economic system, and that's pretty severe. So once we avoid that, now we're just dealing with recessionary fears and inflation and things like that. And I think the market has stabilized and perhaps rallied off those lows because of that.
Bernie McSherry from Cotone & Company in New York. We got him on the floor of the stock exchange this afternoon. Mr. McSherry, thanks a lot for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Coming up, political attention turns to agriculture.
Animals raised for food are crammed into cages so small they can't move. That's not right. Good news is we can change it.
But first, let's do the numbers. As Bernie McSherry and I alluded to, Wall Street got slapped with a fresh batch of discouraging economic numbers today and so found more reason to be uptight than upbeat about the future. That sent the Dow Industrials on another roller coaster plunge of 486 points, 5%. Blue chips closed at 9,139. The NASDAQ skidded 98 points, 5.5%, finished at 1681. The S&P 500 gave back 52 points, a decline of 5.25%, wrapped up the trading day back below 1,000 at 952. By the way, yesterday the market enjoyed its biggest election day rally on record. Today, it saw its worst post-election decline. Yesterday, financial stocks looked like a buying opportunity. Today, time to unload them again. Citigroup shares took a 14% beating. Merrill Lynch stock dropped almost 12%. Bank of America shares fell more than 11%. Morgan Stanley sank almost 10%. Today, shares of Goldman Sachs lost 8%. JP Morgan Chase stock gave up 7%. The 10-year T-note traded basically flat. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 888-VANGUARD. And by Cleveland Clinic, committed to providing health and wellness services through its executive health program at clevelandclinic.org/executive health. Sustainability reporting is supported by Johnson Controls, making homes, cars, and workplaces more comfortable, safe, and sustainable. Johnson Controls, where ingenuity is welcome. What's the connection between champagne and collateralized debt obligations? Head on over to our website, marketplace.org. There you'll find videos uncorking the basics of the financial crisis.
From the Marketplace State Book, here's a look at events for Thursday. Undersecretary of State Reuben Jeffrey III presents the 2008 Secretary of State's Award for Corporate Excellence. Georgetown Law Center holds a town hall meeting on juvenile justice priorities for the new administration. And on this day in 1944, plutonium was produced for the very first time at Hanford Atomic Facility in Washington State. I'm Millie Jefferson.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. All right, call me a geek, but last night after the election was decided, I got online to check out overseas news reports. I wanted to get some sense of what the global reaction to the vote was. And we're going to try to do something similar right now with Marketplace's Stephen Beard, only with an eye toward the economy. He's on the line from London. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Kai.
All right, so take me beyond the headlines. What is the actual mood over there, the reaction to this election?
Well, I think it's safe to say that Europe is in the grip of Obama mania. I mean, I can't recall, and I'm 59, a U.S. presidential election result which has been so widely applauded in Europe, or a president-elect who has such goodwill. I think many Europeans see Obama as just the kind of outward-looking, cool, calm, intelligent American leader that the world needs to get us out of the economic mess we're in.
Specifically, what are they thinking about with these high hopes?
they're thinking about bridge building, and we're not talking American infrastructure here. We're talking about hands across the sea. I mean, there's a lot of huge, in fact, amount of discussion in Europe at the moment about a so-called new world financial order, changing the rules and the institutions that have governed the global economy since Bretton Woods in 1944. These institutions like the IMF and the World Bank, of course, were made in America's image. Many Europeans now want to see those rules and those institutions changed to reflect the new reality. Emerging economies like China and India playing a bigger role. Now, of course, that means a slightly smaller role for the US, which might be a difficult sell for the American people. But Europeans feel that Obama is the kind of leader who's going to be able to manage that rather tricky transition.
Are there worries over there of what might happen?
There are particular concerns. I've been talking to analysts and brokers all afternoon in the London Financial District. Their particular concern is this extraordinary hiatus you have, this period between the election and inauguration, this 2.5 months. And the concern is that really that they feel the Obama team should be working very closely, very soon with the Bush administration. There is a worry that, you know, at this time of all times, we don't want the world's biggest economy to not have a decisive hand on the tiller.
Stephen Beard at the Marketplace European Desk in London. Thank you, Stephen.
Okay, Kai.
Barack Obama has said he wants to raise taxes on the wealthiest Americans. That means the federal income tax rate for people in the top bracket could jump from 35% to just shy of 40%. Figure 2.5 months to Inauguration Day, as Stephen was just saying, maybe, I don't know, a month or two more for a tax package to get through Congress. And time's running out for businesses and wealthy individuals to make appointments with their accountants. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports now on those who want to take advantage of the old system before the new administration takes over.
Multi-millionaire athletes are among those who could face higher taxes under an Obama administration. So some sports agents are trying to protect the next round of superstars. They're asking for their clients' signing bonuses to be paid during this calendar year. That way, they'd have to pay less to Uncle Sam next year. Other high earners are concerned that Obama might raise the capital gains tax. Tax lawyer Richard Walton with Buckhalter Niemer says even in a down market, this could be the right time to sell certain capital assets.
Such as buildings, such as stocks, such as real estate that have appreciated significantly, and go ahead and realize the capital gains on those investments while the rate continues to be low.
Walton also recommends thinking about estate planning to minimize the death tax.
In a depressed market where investments are not worth as much perhaps as they will be a year or 2 years from now, now is the time to begin moving that money in a way that generates a benefit down the road for estate planning.
Anticipating higher tax rates ahead, Los Angeles-based CPA Steve Willing suggests investors take a second look at their portfolios.
Consider shifting slightly more into the municipal bond category so they have tax-free income, because if the tax rates go up, tax-free income will become more valuable.
But don't overreact. Just because you might save a few bucks by taking the tax hit this year, experts say you could be better off paying slightly more next year and having that cash available. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
According to the Department of Agriculture, there were 333 million egg-laying chickens in this country as of the 1st of October, almost 20 million of them here in California. Thanks to Proposition 2 on the California ballot last night, which passed overwhelmingly, those chickens and some other animals grown for food will have better, if not necessarily longer, lives. Laws requiring better treatment for calves and sows has already passed in Florida and Arizona. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner reports on what could be the start of a national campaign to change animal confinement practices on factory farms.
Before this election, probably few Californians ever gave much thought to the hens that lay their morning eggs. That changed this year when the Humane Society and its supporters put Prop 2 on the state ballot.
Animals raised for food are crammed into cages so small they can't move. That's not right. Good news is we can change it. Come on.
TV celeb Ellen DeGeneres was an outspoken Prop 2 supporter. The initiative essentially outlaws conventional egg production in California. That means housing hens in small stacked wire enclosures, often 8 to a cage. Prop 2 doesn't ban cages per se, but demands enough space so that hens can spread their wings and turn around. Humane Society President Wayne Pacelli says Californians sent the farm industry a message.
These factory farms where the animals are treated like commodities or objects or things is no longer acceptable, and the industry is going to have to better align its practices with public sentiment.
Pacelli's group intends to take this campaign to other states. He believes the California victory may persuade national retailers to eventually go cage-free. Costco and Safeway are already moving in that direction. But critics today called the Prop 2 campaign emotionally manipulative. And Mitch Head at United Egg Producers insists food costs will go up.
We think that once it takes effect and people see that there are perhaps shortages of locally produced eggs or that egg prices go up dramatically in California, other states might be a lot more reluctant to go down this path.
The European Union already is. Janice Swanson, an animal welfare expert at Michigan State, says farmers there are trying everything from barn-like aviaries to bigger cages. And
there's still a lot of bugs to be worked out in these alternative systems.
Bugs like a higher mortality rate among cage-free birds. But farmers in California have some time to work out those kind of bugs. Prop 2 doesn't take effect until 2015. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Shriners Hospitals for Children, providing treatment for orthopedic, burn, and spinal cord injuries at no cost to the families. More at shrinersforkids.org. By Clarkson Potter, publishers of The Splendid Table's How to Eat Supper, a holiday gift idea for people who love to eat, now available at splendidtable.org. And by Putnam Investments, where a 529 plan can help meet your college savings goals. Details at putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
These final notes today. First of all, it is not true that Yahoo is selling itself to Microsoft. If you thought the deal was dead and gone months ago, as we all did, blame Google for bringing it back. This morning, the search engine company walked away from its advertising deal with Yahoo. Google said there were too many objections from regulators. The news apparently brought some hope that a Yahoo deal with Microsoft was back on. A spokeswoman for Yahoo said today, not so. And now for a little money-related election news. Payday lending laws were on the ballot in Arizona and Ohio yesterday. Ohioans approved a measure to cut the maximum annual interest rate on payday loans to 28%. The measure also limits borrowers to only 4 of those payday loans every year. Meanwhile, in Arizona, voters rejected a payday loan measure. It would have reduced payday loan fees, but at the same time, it would have permitted, get this, up to 391% in annual interest payments. 391%. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media, this day after the election of 2008. Today, the Dow fell 486 points, 5%. The NASDAQ lost 98 points, 5.5%. The S&P 500 sank 52 points, 5.25% there. Ravi Karman, Stephen Colon, Eric Johnson, Jeff Peters, Aaron Scott, and Phil Stearns engineer the program for us. Coming up next time, we will be in Baltimore, where the recessions caused heartache and some health problems, too.
One of the spin-off results is that more and more people wind up in the emergency room because it is the one place that they can go.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.